Welcome to Leadership Reimagined, Episode 8, where Rolis Fontenoy III, President at Ascend HR Corporation, shares how he has reimagined leadership in HR recruiting. During each episode, we look at leadership from the vantage point of what it's going to take for leaders to lead their organizations forward into a new future. I'm Dr. Jane Lovis, your host. If you're looking to reimagine your leadership, I would love to help you and your team. Go to reimagineyourleadership.com and I'll call you. We'll have fun and expand your business at the same time. I know, shouldn't it be fun? If it's not, why are you doing it? So, Rolis, thank you for being here, being my guest on Leadership Reimagined. Would you like to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you?
Personally? Yeah, or professionally?
Yeah, both.
Okay. So, let's see. Personally, oh boy. I like music a lot. Mm. I like music a lot. Different types of music. Whether it's R&B, salsa, merengue, bachatas, cumbias, you name it. Pop, big band, everything across the board. Like the beach. I got the beach thing behind me. I love the beach. My wife's from Jamaica. I love visiting the beach. Mm. And let's see. Well, it depends. I mean, it depends on the mood. Now, I like a lot of techie stuff, too. Like, I got a lot of techie stuff around me. I got screens and stuff and... You know, I always like to learn about new stuff that's technology related. Of course, I'm a recruiter, so I like connecting with people. I like collaboration. I like laughing a lot. I even like video games. There's this one particular video game I play, which is it's a football game. It's John Madden football because I like NFL football. I like sports. So that's another part of me, too.
All around. So tell us a little bit about your business.
The business is I've been a recruiter or been in recruiting since what? It's 2004 and branched out on my own around 2010. One thing I didn't like about the business I was in is I didn't feel like we were really making a difference in helping folks. We were just kind of putting Band-Aids on things and not really making any long-lasting changes. So with our business, we started doing the same stuff I used to do before, which was contingency recruiting. But I was like, we got to do something different. So came up with a subscription-based model. It's the only one I know of that's a true subscription-based company, not just like something we offer. But we do subscription-based recruiting as a service. And so it's kind of cutting edge, kind of a it's a kind of a new option people don't really consider. Because normally recruiting the way it's done in our business, it's very transactional. So you hire this person, they start, and you pay us a fee. Whereas now we partner with the clients. We really work side by side with them. Let's figure out the best way we can create the best result possible together. And it doesn't matter how many placements we make, we get paid the same. It's just a monthly subscription amount. And so the more that the client utilizes our service, the lower the cost of the service. Whereas the model I had before, the more they used our service, the higher the cost. And you would think, well, why would you want to do that? That seems counterintuitive. Because we're partnering with the client, we actually end up winning on both sides. The revenue went up considerably since we did this because clients wanted to do more business. And we liked it because we weren't competing with clients. We were actually working with them. And it's created long-lasting relationships. We become like basically friends with our clients versus just the whole transactional, you know, let's see who fills this job first and fastest.
Wow. That is unique. And I can really see that, especially with this podcast, Leadership Reimagined, that's a real new way also to look at hiring. Because I know, having been the recipient of going through a recruiting firm, for different positions, sometimes as a contractor or even some of the small contracting firms that really are recruiting firms kinds of things, that It did. It felt like a transaction.
Yeah.
And unless it was an individual person that had maybe done a number of placements in the same company, I didn't feel like there was any real synergy between the two companies.
Exactly.
But the companies, you know, as the recruiting company, that who your client was, who that company that's going to hire this person, who they are, what their values are, what their culture is, what they're like. There was none of that. And then what the individual, what companies they like to work for, what culture is important to them. So how do you look at that as you're doing your recruiting?
Well, in a lot of cases, the types of jobs we're working on, so few applicants apply on these particular positions that the client feels like they would like to kind of control that relationship with that particular candidate. So what happens is very early on, the candidate starts having direct interaction with the client we're working with. We don't stay in the middle of that very much, unless the client special requests, like on a certain project, they want us to be more involved, they want us to do the candidate side recruitment, we'll do that. But the main reason why they're bringing us into the fold, Jane, is to help get more candidates that are qualified for their jobs. Mm-hmm. So the more the relationship is created between us and the employer, more so than us and the candidates. Now, we have had some projects where we work on the candidates, and we're very holistic in our recruitment approach. We feel like the candidates are a very important part of the process. They should not be transactional. They're not cattle. These are people. Mm-hmm. So we need to follow up with them when it comes to their application. Even if they're not going to get hired, let them know what's going on. We're passionate about that. We're passionate about replying to that candidate within 3 business days. Generally, it's within 1 business day, but that's the max that we'll take to respond to a client. And we encourage, or to a candidate, and we encourage our clients to do the same thing. We encourage them, look, if you want to get these candidates in, and these are hard to fill positions, it needs to be a priority to respond back to these candidates within a very short period of time. Otherwise, you will lose their interest. It kind of disturbs the whole recruitment flow. I feel like there's a flow when you're recruiting, mm-hmm. and when you're looking for a job. A person's looking for signs that they're on the right track. And if you're very late in responding to them, you've just broken that recruitment flow, and now they have doubts about whether you're interested or whether this is the right place for them. So we don't want to do anything to disturb that flow. So if we are on the candidate side working with candidates, we make sure we respond to them quickly. We give them an answer, even if we don't know the answer.
Because, right.
Recruiters tend to, in most cases, because they have so many requisitions they're working on, so many conflicting things they're working on, that usually they just don't respond to candidates. And it's very frustrating to the candidate because mm-hmm. they're like, I mean, this recruiter was like calling me every other day and all these updates and everything. And all of a sudden, they're not even responding to an email or a text, right. let alone a phone call. So we are holistic in that way. Whenever we do work with the candidate side, that we want to make it an awesome experience, because we want to be an extension of the brand of that employer. And we know how important it is. It's a branding vehicle whenever you are treating these candidates in a good way or a bad way. And those same candidates could be future customers of that business. Mm-hmm. We look at that as a possibility, so we treat them as such. So I definitely feel you on your past experiences. It's not uncommon, unfortunately. In fact, I wrote an article back in 2016 about why is there my recruiter not calling me back? And right. the amount of people that responded, they get thousands and thousands upon views and hundreds, over 100 and something comments of people who felt the same way. They just felt like, man, they felt like they just got jilted. Like, why is this? I mean, I get it if I didn't get the job, but why wouldn't you respond to me?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And how do you think that this helps employers? So small businesses and this,
We've been working on. We've got 2 basic ways that we've been interacting with clients. The most popular, or the one that's been used the most, is what we call kind of the services model, or what's sometimes called the do-it-for-you model, where they're like, look, we need more candidates for these jobs. Can you help us get candidates? The answer to that question is yes, we can. We'll handle the way the job is posted and formatted. We'll also help with creating content that's very attractive to your audience. For instance, probably 80% of our orders are registered nurses. So we're creating videos. We're creating. We're making sure we have pictures placed nicely in the postings to attract those nurses to want to apply. Most of what we're using now is video. It's very effective to use video right now online. So mm-hmm. we use short kind of vignettes, maybe a little minute long videos that kind of talk with maybe it's a nurse or a potential hiring manager about the job, what it's like to work there, and all that to really get that candidate potentially interested in applying. And we find it's been very effective to try to reach those candidates who aren't on a job board. Not everybody's on a job board right now, especially if they're busy being a nurse doing what they're doing. Last thing they want to do is spend hours and hours and hours looking for jobs. So we have ways of reaching those with that video content. We will reach out to those nurses. We create what's called an audience in the advertising world, and we shoot that audience with that message. And then we want to make sure that the offer is strong, too, because if you have this great message, it needs to be better than what they're getting now, or at least on par with what they're getting now. So we want to make sure the offer is good. So we work with clients to make sure that your offer is strong. And I say offer, I mean your pay, your benefits, sign-on bonuses, relocation offerings, things of that nature. So we got to be strong in all those different areas. You know, our messaging has to be good. We want to highlight the good parts about the job and be as transparent as we can about the things that maybe aren't as great about the job, because that actually scores a lot of points with the nurses. They feel more mm-hmm. confident applying. And then also having an offer that actually resonates with them where they want to apply. So that's where we help the employers the most.
I see that in one, you're able to help them up level what they're currently doing, which is something that everybody needs to be looking at. How are, whatever service you're doing, whatever it is you're doing, it's time to up-level that. Take it to the next level. We've been doing things kind of the same way for a long time. And I love that being transparent about what's not perfect.
Right.
You know, because everyone knows there's stuff that's going on.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And by being transparent about that and sharing it, it's not some deep, dark secret. And you can, you know, new employees then come in with a sense of what they're really getting themselves into.
Yes. I think that organizations underestimate how important trust and authenticity and credibility plays into the recruitment process. If you don't have that, if you can't get that from the candidates, they're not going to want to apply. I'm talking about the really good ones. Mm-hmm. You have someone who they're just going to like click 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 and just apply to a bunch of jobs, but the ones that they really want are those they're going to have to garner some trust with. And I've talked to nurses over and over and over again. They're like, look, we get it. We know the job's not going to be perfect. We are nurses. We have experience. We know it's not perfect. So exactly. Go ahead and give it to us. Let us know so we don't get in a situation where we start and then we end up quitting and leaving. Then that wastes everybody's time. It wastes resources. So we're working with clients on that. I can tell you it's difficult because clients don't want to do that. They don't want to talk about what's not optimal about their organization. They only want to talk about the fluffy stuff. But that's actually not what the nurses want. They want to feel like they're being presented with what their opportunity is really like. So they want to know if you're going to work them overtime and want them to work extra shifts, then we should have a campaign that caters to that. Let them know up front that this is a job where you can come in, you can make actually significant impact on paying off some of those student loans and make some good money here because there's going to be lots of overtime available.
Right.
Still working with folks on that, you know, because that's the reality. You sell this work-life balance and you get them in there and they're like, you know what, instead of working your 3-12s you're supposed to work, we need you to work 4, maybe 5. Can you work 5?
Yeah. Oh, I have young children. No, I cannot do that. But if I knew, one, they wouldn't have taken the job, or They might have looked at how do I do that if that's what, because maybe they do want to work those hours.
But yeah, some do. Like,
being prepared for it. And there's, yeah, that authenticity and trust, that works. That is so important to go both ways.
Yes.
And yeah. So often employers want it from their employees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And all they want to say is, trust me, it'll be okay. And, you know, when there's that honesty there and the trust going both ways, it's amazing what people can deal with.
Yep. And let's say it's a situation where the hospital knows that they're going to work them overtime. But they don't want it to last forever. They don't want to do that because they know it's not sustainable for them as a hospital to keep paying overtime. Let's just be transparent as to what the job is like now and then work with them and say, look, this is not a long-term thing. We're trying to bring folks in so that we don't have to work everybody overtime. So the first few months, it's going to be quite a bit overtime, but it's going to slow down quite a bit. Those kind of conversations, I feel like, need to happen, you know, more often so that we don't have a situation where you have nurses come in and they can't even make it through their orientation period because they're just ticked off because they were just felt like they were sold a bill of goods that just wasn't really true.
Yeah. Yeah. And that in any organization causes turnover.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I say nurses, but I mean, it could be anything. It'd be any role out there.
Yeah. And one of the things I'm looking at is, you know, my background's technology, and I look at the turnover in technology, and it's some of those same things. Well, I didn't sign up to work 18-hour days. You know, I didn't know I was going to get put on this proposal that, you know, twice a year where we spend a month killing ourselves, you know. Tell people.
Yeah. I think sometimes too, and I don't want to, you know, be too hard on the companies. I think sometimes, and we all do this, I do it too, is we tend to kind of look back at the rosy parts and we don't sometimes take stock of who we are at that moment.
Right.
And so one of the things that Quint Studer talks about, he's wrote a couple of books and he has his healthcare consulting company he had and sold. And one of the things he talked about is, you know, great leaders, they don't live in that world. They look at what's reality, where are we now? They're not making excuses.
Right.
And I think that's the kind of leadership that we want to see right now. I think nurses want to see is, let's just be honest about where we are right now. So, you know, if we had trouble, you know, with the overtime situation, we're working nurses a lot of overtime. Let's honor that. Let's let the candidates know, listen, we are short staffed right now, but we are actively recruiting, bringing in folks so we don't have folks having to work overtime.
Right.
You know, so I think having those kind of, you know, conversations, and it could be other things. It could be maybe they had some kind of recent difficulty with the company. Mm-hmm. Being open about those things. I think people really appreciate that type of authenticity today.
Yes.
I mean, people can do a Google search. They can find out on their own anyway.
Exactly.
See, yes. That's what helped.
And the Glassdoor and all of these places, you know, yeah. These things are not secret.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, when leadership, when leaders are being open like that, then also, it's also easier to ask, make requests, and for people to say yes to those requests, because they're not so likely to feel taken advantage of.
Yes. So true. Yeah. I mean, think of how different it would be if you're interviewing somebody and you're saying, listen, we are really shorthanded right now. We're going to have to work you quite a few hours. If you accept this job, you're going to be working quite a few hours the first several weeks, because our data shows that you're going to be working several hours of overtime over the next 4 weeks or 2 months or whatever the case is.
Yep.
And then, but after that, we feel like we will have been able to work out some of those issues and have enough staff. And if companies aren't sure about where they are, start looking at the data. Go ahead and look at your overtime. It's mm-hmm. probably not going to change that much over the next several months, just because you want it to change.
Right.
It's going to take a little time, you know, to work those things out. So let's look at ourselves and look at what our situation is. You know, if we've had some issues, whether maybe there were some regulatory issues or something like that that came into play.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at what those are. Let's be honest and transparent about it. Talk with these candidates. This is what we're actively trying to fix right now. In fact, us bringing you on may help us to start to fix that issue. That's why we need you here.
Right.
So we can fix those issues. And then now it's like the candidates on a mission. They want to help. They're buying in, and they're okay with working overtime because you already told them they're going to work overtime.
Right.
You know, versus just saying, oh, you only work 36 hours or you only work 40 hours or whatever the case is. And then as soon as they start, we're already asking them to work overtime. Like, wait a second. I got kids. I got a sick mom. Y'all didn't discuss all this.
Yeah. And no acknowledgement of what plans we're trying to put in place, what we've been doing. Like we're actively recruiting. And there's a shortage of staff at this particular time, whatever is, but we're out there, we're actively recruiting. And we don't want to bring on just anybody because we know that causes other issues. And so here's what we're putting in place. So yeah. And something that I hear fairly often from leaders is, and this is, I was responding to somebody's post on LinkedIn this morning about, you know, in diversity, and that we don't have so many organizations aren't diverse, whether it's all white men, white women, you know, and I look at that and it's like, I being in a technology, I was a minority as a woman, even as a white woman.
Yes.
And I know that for me, one of the questions to look at is, well, if you say that there's not enough qualified candidates, what's missing? What conversations are not being had? What support is not there? You know, to say, well, we're just fishing in this pond. Oh, and we're not getting any big fish. You know, we're getting all sunfish and we want some, you know, some sharks or something. Well, you can't limit yourself. So what can you do to make sure that you're reaching as many people as you can that either are possible employees or no possible employees?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, those are great points. I mean, I think a lot of people right now they get equal opportunity discrimination confused with diversity hiring and making a strategic focus towards hiring diverse demographic, as well as also once you hire them, you can't just hire them. You want to also include them. So
right.
That's where the inclusion comes into play. Like, are they involved in management? Are they involved in decisions? But step one is just like, look, just because you didn't discriminate against a person, that doesn't mean that you're good about diversity hiring. Because if I have 10 candidates, and out of those 10 candidates, only, let's say, 3 of them have the level of experience that my hiring manager asked for, the other 7 didn't have the same level of experience, but they can definitely do the job. They've got all the skill set for the job, but they just haven't been given the opportunity before. Maybe their experience is less, but they have experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, well, you know what? I just hired the most qualified person. And it just so happened those 3 people have been given lots of opportunities in their life. And oh, by the way, they're all white males.
Mm-hmm.
The other 7 were either women or minorities. And so they weren't as qualified as the top ones. So we went ahead and hired the top ones. And so the cycle never ends.
Right.
So we've got to get to a point, okay, we understand about the experience is important, but can they do the job? Can this person do the job? So let's give them an opportunity. Because how many times have, let's just be honest here, how many times over the years, not necessarily because of prejudice, it could be just maybe they're in the right circles, but it just so happened that these white males got opportunities to get jobs that just weren't available to the others, mm-hmm. just because of maybe who was in their network, the same like me concept where they're just hiring folks that are like them, they're in their circles, and it may not have been prejudice involved. So next time the job comes up available, they're the most qualified because they got that opportunity years ago.
Right.
And these other six or seven that applied that are qualified in a sense they can do the job, they don't have as much experience, they haven't been given the opportunity, they don't get hired.
Right.
That's what I see quite a bit. I don't see it as much in the registered nurses, but I do see it. It still happens where, especially when we're talking new grads, okay? So new grads, certain ones are going to get snapped up first.
Mm-hmm.
We just have to be transparent about this, that it just so happens that certain ones are going to get snapped up first, and they typically are not minorities.
Right.
So, you know, new grad nurses do sometimes get a hard time getting a job, especially if they're not from here originally. This is maybe this isn't their first language. They maybe they've been here for several years, mm-hmm. but they're not from here.
Right.
And they've got a different name. They look different. They have a different, you know, maybe a religion where they dress different. Maybe they have to have something, you know, on their head.
Right.
I mean, so it could be a number of different things. We'll say, ooh, you know, let's go ahead. This other person has graduated from the same school. Let's just go with this other one here.
Right.
That looks like us and that we understand
better. It's safe.
Yeah. So we see a lot of that happens too. And so I think it's going to take. One thing I did notice, I was watching a documentary the other day. You have to show the hiring manager or the company, what's this advantage to them for making diverse hires? You're not going to get there with changing the laws and stuff as much, because they're always going to try and find loopholes.
Right.
They have to see what is the strategic advantage to them. So that can only be done by educating that hiring manager.
Yeah.
And I would challenge you, you can even take a person who's prejudiced against a certain race or a certain religion or whatever the case is, and you can get them to hire that person if they know it's a strategic advantage.
Yeah, that's a great point. And so us as you as a recruiter and me as a business consultant, you know, and studies show that the more diverse an organization is, the more successful they are. And you know, that's probably not there out there for the average leader CEO to find. Those of us that study this and look at this and are out researching things, we go, oh, well, why would you not?
Right.
You really want to create a really diverse organization because that gives you a step up on your success.
Yeah, I saw an interview with, and so that's why we need people like you who are consultants who can give them that information.
Yeah.
Kevin Leary, who's on the Shark Tank, they were interviewing him. I saw an interview, it was about 2 years ago. And he's like, I don't care what they look like or where they come from. If they can make me money, I want to hire them. And most business people are like that. And he said that, you know what, after we ran the numbers, it just so happened that all of his profitable businesses that he had, they were all women run companies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he didn't do that because he says, oh, I want to be good and I want to hire, you know, women owned companies. He didn't do that. He just looked at each business deal, and the ones he thought were the best business deals, he went ahead and went for those. When they went back and analyzed them, they found out that the ones that performed the best were the ones that were run by women.
Yeah.
He doesn't know the reason why. He did want to find out how he can do more of it. He wants to know how he can hire more of them. And he's like to the ones who are run by the men, he's like, hey, you need to talk to these women ones over here. See what they're doing. Because whatever they're doing, it's better than what y'all are doing.
Right, right.
But it just goes back to the point that he's a guy who he didn't care about the whole diversity thing.
Right.
He just wants to make money. And there's a lot of business owners out there that may even be to the other extreme, where not only do they want to make money, but they may have certain prejudices against certain types of people, whether it's age, could be religion, could be race, could be a number of things.
Yep.
And they may say, you know, I don't want to hire this type of person. But if a business consultant like you comes in, or someone gives them that information, that if you actually are open to hiring these other types of folks, it will make you more profitable, put more money in your pocket, help you have a more sustainable business.
Yep.
Now, all of a sudden, now you got that person's attention. And now there's an old saying about bring them in church and baptize them later. Once they start hiring those folks, and they actually might figure out they like those folks. Well, you know, I do like that. I didn't think I liked them. I grew up not liking them. But, man, I tell you, I like Joe or Susie or whoever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And once you start that, then there's a whole lot of other change that starts to happen. And that's, you know, one of the challenges of that is from the hiring process is whole person, looking at the whole person, not only who has the best experience right now, because you're going to create experience, but who fits your organization? Who's going to take your organization? Who's going to challenge your organization so that it can grow?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's not just about diversity. It's about diversity of thought, mm-hmm. diversity of ideas, things that they would not have ever thought about as a business owner. But because they have people who don't look like them or think like them on their team, they're able to bring in some ideas they never would have thought about.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I love about our team. We're very diverse. We've always been. We've got folks even from different countries that work on our team. So we include them. You know, we've got folks, of course, here in Texas. Most of my staff is here in Texas. But we have staff in Ohio, Connecticut, Philippines, Bangladesh, India. So we're on conference calls together or having these Slack messages together.
Yep.
And getting ideas that we just would not have gotten had we just stayed in the old bubble of, oh, no, let me just hire a bunch of my buddies and we'll just all work together.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I like to encourage people to go out and look further beyond your immediate circle. You know, there's a saying, I can't remember who said it, Tony Robbins or somebody like that, that said, if you want to know what you're like, look at your five closest friends.
Mm.
And then somebody else said, if you want to know how diverse you are, look at the people who you invite to your house.
Mm-hmm.
And I've really begun paying attention to that. And, you know, not so much who do I invite to my house, because that's virtually no one, just because situation right now, but who do I have like personal conference calls with? Who do I go out and have coffee with? Who do I socialize out with?
Yeah.
And I've got a very diverse group of people. Age-wise, sex-wise, race-wise, you know, country-wise, all of that. And I've really gotten to be intentional. You know, I look at that and I'm paying attention to how much like me are they? And the only piece that I really want them to be very much like me is to be open thinkers, care for, you know, the world, for other people, you know, real caring, and willing to look at and discuss new ideas.
Absolutely.
That I want them to be just like me.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, you reminded me of something that I remember Warren Buffett, he used to say, he said in one of his speeches to a graduate class, and it was like, you know, whenever you're looking at folks to add on your team, says you want to add people who are, you know, very smart. You want to add folks who have lots of energy and they have integrity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they don't have integrity, then the other two don't matter.
Right.
Because you don't want to have someone who's smart and who has lots of energy, but they have no integrity. That's going to kill your company. But he says, I want those three. And if, you know, that isn't always evident by experience, because just because you do something for a long period of time doesn't even mean you're proficient at it. You could just be repeating the same mistakes over and over again.
Yeah.
So can the person do the job? Now, in my world, they have to have a license. They have to have go to school. Those are basics. We can't just take someone who, you know, a dog walker or a cashier, and then all of a sudden they want to be a nurse.
Right.
So we do have those things. There's that bar. But once you get past that bar, the next question is, can they do the job? Okay, great. They can do the job. Okay. Is this person someone who can treat patients, in a way that is, you know, kind and reflects the values of the organization? Those types of things are you're getting to that point. You know, not necessarily what color they are, how old they are, how, you know, not even necessarily how long they've been a nurse.
Right.
You know, because there's some old cranky nurses out there.
And there's some young cranky nurses too.
And there's some young ones too.
And really, you know, this you're bringing up that once you have those minimum requirements, and especially like with nurses, those are not easily trainable. I mean, because you have to have gone to school, you have to have passed the test to get the license. But once you have that bar met, you really want to look at what kind of nurse do you want?
Yes.
You really want is having caring, patient, you know, your culture, is that as opposed to somebody with 7 years of experience versus 3 years of experience?
Right, exactly.
Because the experience will come.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't, it's much harder to change a cranky nurse into a very patient nurse.
Yeah, it's in most cases, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
And like you said, it could be a long-term nurse or a new nurse, but those are the things that you really want to, those are things that affect patient satisfaction scores,
yep,
which hit the bottom line, and patient outcomes, which hit the bottom line of the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be, and I think it is to a great extent, on the minds of these hiring managers, but it is also easy to go back into the same habit of the same like me concept. Well, right. They don't smile like I do, or they don't look like I do, or they don't speak the language like I do. They could be able to communicate in the language,
yeah,
but maybe they don't have the perfect accent like what we have. You know, right. So there could be a number of little things, and they may not come out and say that. There's, oh, this candidate isn't a fit.
Right. Yeah.
But in this the back one, of the mind.
And then when it's easier to go, this one's better qualified. They've got 7 years of experience, and we asked for 5+. So this one fits that.
And that's the safe answer, right? It's a safe thing. You can say, okay, they have 7 years. I'm justified. My I's are dotted and my T's are crossed. I'm good.
Right.
But which one would the organization have actually been better with?
Yeah.
Now, another issue we have, I know in our world, in the healthcare world, is a lot of times healthcare organizations don't have time to fully train and mentor someone who doesn't have the needed experience. So they may be a nurse, but they may not have ever worked in an ICU, or they may not have ever worked in the OR. And those are different skill sets, or the ER.
Yep.
And so these hiring managers are looking for folks who not only have been a nurse, but have they been a nurse working in this department? That's when they don't have enough, you know, enough resources to train. And right now with COVID going on and all this, you know, they have to make sure that they take care of the patients first,
Yep.
So some of them are concerned about bringing on new grads, but there's still a lot of organizations that still are recruiting new grads. But it's just that some of these, especially smaller hospitals, community hospitals, they only have so many resources to train people.
Yep. Yeah. And that again comes down to asking yourself the question, you know, what's missing? Okay, right now we're in a pandemic. We need ICU nurses. We need nurses that have been in intensive care. That's of the paramount. So what can we do if we can't get the bet, you know, do that? What can we do next? And then what can we do moving forward as we come out of COVID?
Mm-hmm.
Because then that's not always the best answer, you know?
Right.
Yeah. And this really applies to any other organization, to tech organizations, other small organizations, anybody that keeps, it's like, we're in a crunch. We need to get this. Well, without that planning and that out that looking, okay, what are we gonna do instead of this next time? I had a client that I was working with, and we were really starting to work on their culture, their organizational culture. And they had a bookkeeper, and they'd had a really great bookkeeper. And then they hired this new bookkeeper, and she was she wanted to do things her own way. They're a government contractor. The government says, this is how you have to do things, or we're not going to process your invoices. And they had all these challenges. And I said, well, you know, you've had a number of conversations with her. Maybe it's time to let her go. They were like, no, we can't let her go. It's so hard to find another bookkeeper. We'll never find somebody. So they had her for a year. And I've been working with, you know, I was working with them on some other things and this, but this conversation came up every time. This person wasn't working. Oh, all the angst. Finally, we had been doing some work on the culture, and I said, you know, she is just so not a fit for this culture.
Mm-hmm.
And before they could let her go, she actually quit.
Yeah.
So we're having a discussion about them hiring their next bookkeeper. And I said, now just think of all the time we spent for the last year having conversations about this employee.
Mm-hmm.
Think about what you paid me to listen to you on those conversations. And the time we didn't get to do some of these other things.
Mm-hmm.
So they really took this opportunity to use their culture as a part of the hiring process.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
And the person they hired is just an absolute gem.
Oh, that's great. I love those stories.
Yeah. And it took a while. So they actually had to do some of the bookkeeping, which is what they were afraid of, you know, but they survived it.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh, geez, we should have done this year. have done this at the beginning. I said, I know.
Yeah, it's hard. I know it's hard. If you feel like you're really dependent on someone and, you know, you're busy doing other stuff, you don't want to go through the whole process of finding someone else. And then who knows, even the new person you hire may be the wrong fit too. And you're like, let's just go with what we got.
Yep. Yep.
Or maybe it's a situation where, let's say you're going to let this person go and you're afraid of what that's going to do your culture, with your other employees, how are they going to feel? But I have found that if it's someone that's a problem employee and you let them go, the team is like, what the heck? What took you so long?
Yeah. Ex- Exactly.
They're not sad at all. And I was angst over. I had angst over it. I was just stressing over it and didn't want to do it. And finally, I just, you know, want to help them move on to their next spot, because this obviously isn't the best place for them. And the other folks were like, man, yeah, what took you so long? We were wondering because they're not going to tell you to fire somebody. It's just, it's not their job.
Right.
You know, it's you as the hiring manager or the owner to do that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I've done that. I've held people on too long, and it doesn't do them any favors, because it's less time that they have to move on to their next opportunity. It's going to be better for them. Most cases, they do find something better. I know folks, that's what's happened to me. I've seen them do very well since leaving. We just may have been the wrong fit for them.
Exactly. And so really the absolute kindness, as you say, is to help them move along. You know, you don't have to just point blank fire someone, you know, today's your last day. Goodbye.
Right.
There are conversations and there are things you can do that are going to support both of you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm for, you know, helping them even as much as helping them to find something else, mm-hmm. you know, not to the point of an outplacement, but to the point of at least, you know, pointing in the right direction, making referrals or recommendations based on what I know about that person. I think this person will do better in this type of job or environment. And so I can, in some cases, refer them or at least be a recommendation for them. Look, you can use me as a reference if you want. Don't use me as a reference for this same job, because this is not going to work out, or this same, you know, situation. But there's a lot of other things I think you do extremely well at. And I'd be happy to be a referral for you.
Yeah. So, what I call that is supporting them to thrive someplace else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So I believe in that. But, you know, even as many times as I've offered that, typically they don't take me up on it. They just kind of, sometimes what they'll do is they might use one of my other staff to be their reference. And they tend to find something that's better for them. And I'm so happy for them when they do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause they're usually not happy either. They're not happy, which is how it comes out.
Yeah. And they don't want to quit.
Right.
They don't want to quit, because then I've had them tell me, Ross, I didn't want to fail on you like that. I didn't want to quit on you like that.
Yeah.
But they knew that they knew it wasn't working out. They knew it wasn't the right fit. They wanted it to work out, and they didn't want to quit. They knew it wasn't the right fit, but they didn't want to quit. So sometimes it's like a relief. It's like, oh, it's almost like, thank you.
Yeah. Well, this has been great, Rollis. So
I enjoyed it. This has been fun.
Anything else you'd like to say?
I would say to those, I know you said some of your audience are the entrepreneurs, the small business owners. You know, whenever you're looking to hire somebody, before you hire the person, figure out who you want, like the type of person you want on your team. So think about the person you want, the type of skill set you want, from a soft skill set, I mean.
Mm, yes.
That first, and then go to the experience part. And then when you go to the experience part, don't shoot yourself in the foot by requiring more than what the job calls for. There's so many jobs that they call for these certain college degrees and things, and it's not a college degree type job. Now, for RNs, yeah, they have to have a college degree. But there's a lot of other jobs you don't. So try not to make the bar too high on requirements.
Yeah.
And I would say also to, you know, play to your strength. So if you're a small company and you can't offer the same salaries as maybe the bigger company, offer something different. Maybe you can offer work-life balance. You can offer flexibility. You can offer career growth. There's other things you can offer besides just the dollars. And attract those folks. They will come to your organization, they'll be loyal to your organization as long as you're loyal to them.
Yeah.
So I think even in these challenging times, you can find great, great staff for your company.
And who's your ideal client?
Okay, so ideal client would be, in most cases, a hospital. And that hospital is one that's not too big. Because if they're large systems, those are the ones that have a lot of things, not a lot of moving parts in place, and they move slower, that they can't make changes fast, a lot of political things involved. I much prefer the smaller systems. That's my preference.
Okay.
So that's my ideal client would be like a, you know, a system that has maybe anywhere from 50 on up to maybe 300 or 400 bed hospitals. You know, not these systems that have 25 to 50,000 employees and
they've
got 65 to 100 hospitals throughout the United States. I'm not saying I won't work with those companies. There's certain things we can do with them because we do have some tools for them. But if you're asking me who my ideal client is, I think I can really make a difference, the most difference in those community hospitals, those hospitals that are smaller, they don't have all the same resources as the big ones, and I can show them how they can compete with the big ones.
And those are a lot of times the ones that really need the support. They need that additional support in whether it's hospitals or organizations, those mid-size organizations, because they don't have all the resources that the big ones do, but they're nimble and they can be flexible in what they're doing and what they're offering. So they do have lots of advantages, and a lot of people like to be involved at that level because they can make a difference. They can really, you're not just a nurse or an employee basically punching a time clock.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're there really going to make a difference in that organization.
Yeah. I mean, you become a big fish in a small pond, so to speak. I mean, you feel like you really, your impact is there. They're hearing you. And in some cases, they're actually able to act on what you're saying. Whereas if it's a large organization, forget about it.
Yeah.
You have no decision-making ability.
Right. Well, this has been great.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you for having me on today. I'm excited. I'm really, really appreciate being able to share this with you. And hopefully this will help your listeners. It helped me, actually.
Yeah, I think so. I think I always get so much just talking through all these different things. And there's always nuggets of leadership that come out. So thank
Absolutely.
You.
Thank you, Jane.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us this week on Leadership Reimagined. Now is the time to reimagine your leadership. Take a minute and go to reimagineyourleadership.com, and I'll call you. We'll have powerful conversations. You'll take action. Yes, there are always actions to take. Your business will expand, and I guarantee you'll have fun at the same time. I know, shouldn't it be fun? If it's not, why are you doing it?